Hello, happy Friday. Welcome to the Whistleblower Newsroom. I'm Christina Borgeson here with my co-host Celia Farber and a very special guest. He is super lawyer David Boies, chairman of the law firm Boies, Schiller & Flexner, a high-profile firm that for the last 5 years has spent millions of its own money in legal fees, hundreds of thousands of dollars in expenses, to represent five of dead pedophile Jeffrey Epstein's victims, including Virginia Roberts Guifre, who you've seen on the news lately. Why? Because Boies says he was astonished that Epstein had a sex trafficking ring and could walk the street, and that this represented a serious breakdown of our legal system. Sex trafficking, he says, doesn't get the attention it deserves. Guifre and the other victims Boies represents are extremely fortunate to have behind them the brains that led the government's successful prosecution of an antitrust case against Microsoft, that represented Democratic presidential candidate Al Gore during the 2000 election vote recount hanging Chad dispute in Florida, and the brains behind the invalidation of California's Proposition 8 banning same-sex marriage in the courts. Welcome, Mr. Boies.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
So before we went on the air, you started telling us how you walked into this very expensive mission of yours.
Right.
So could you start that story again and tell us what happened?
Sure. Back in June of 2014, I'm sitting in my office in Manhattan and plenty busy. And this guy walks in and he says, "We've got a client that needs your help." And he knew that my firm had for many years had an area of concentration in terms of our pro bono practice of representing disadvantaged and abused women and children. We had programs in some of our offices where we had domestic violence units. We'd done a major piece of litigation down in Florida where we had forced the state of Florida to improve the quality of medical service for indigent children. And we were just in the process of beginning an investigation of Backpage.com, which used to be the largest sex trafficking website in the world. And we ultimately brought a lawsuit that helped end that operation. And so he knew that we had an interest in sex trafficking and abuse of children. And he said that he and his partner had been representing a number of victims of a sex trafficking operation in Florida led by Jeffrey Epstein. I'd never heard of Jeffrey Epstein at that point.
Wow.
To show you how little attention this had gotten.
And what year was this now?
This was 2014, June of 2014, 5.5 years ago. And he said that one of their clients was going to go public and describe the sex trafficking, and he believed that she would be the subject of very, very sustained, well-financed attacks.
Oh, yeah. Attack the victim. That's
it's always always what they do.
Yep.
And given Epstein's wealth and power and influence and the wealth and power and influence of his lawyers and his supporters, they recognized that this was going to be a serious issue for Virginia. And they were a small firm, and they needed somebody who was prepared to devote substantial resources, if necessary, to it. And I interviewed Virginia, was very impressed with her, a woman of great, great courage.
Oh, my God. No kidding.
And so I said we would. Now, I did not know at that point exactly what we were getting ourselves into.
The international and high-level scope of what you were getting into?
And how much I and my firm would be subject to the same kind of attacks that some of our clients are subjected to.
Yeah, and you personally.
And me personally.
Yeah.
I hope you can get into that.
Yeah.
Oh, we will. We will.
Sure. But I mean, but one of the things is that one of the things you find when you take these kind of cases on, particularly the taking on the kinds of cases against rich, powerful, either institutions or individuals, is they have an access to the press, they have access to publicity that enables them to attack and intimidate.
Well, it's not just that, it's not that they have access so much as that they have complicity.
They have complicity.
You know, you
can agree with
you can give a call to CBS, but if CBS doesn't want, or ABC or any of the biggies, if they don't want to touch your story, they're not going to touch it. And if they touch a story like this, right, you know, and give it the slant that they're giving it, you can tell who they're friends with.
No question about it.
You know,
and when we went through that, we got into the case, and I was shocked. The more I learned about the case, the more we talked to some of the girls who had been involved, that this was an operation that was operating in absolute plain sight.
Yeah.
It wasn't hidden. Mm. Epstein himself was a convicted pedophile, and yet he had rich and powerful friends.
Well,
he was a society.
He was a convicted pedophile with a small p,
yeah,
really.
When,
if you
yeah,
if you look at
a small penalty.
I mean, oh yes. What was it? One count of soliciting a prostitute or something, and one count of what was it?
I mean, it was sex with a underage person. One count, and it was a soliciting prostitution or something like that. And but not only that, he served, this was a state case, he served a year in jail, except he didn't serve a year in jail. They let him out. And while he was out, he continued his abuse of young girls while he was out in his office.
When I first read I've never heard of anything like that in my entire life.
He's like the El Chapo of pedophile traffickers, you know?
No.
Astounding.
He was. And
you're convicted, but not really.
And, well, he came to New York and he said, I was like stealing a bagel.
He said,
he said, it's not really important. And of course, the federal prosecutors didn't prosecute him at all.
What about that? Yeah. You know, they've done this before.
Right.
They've done this before in the Franklin case. They've done it before in the Finders case. What is up with that?
Well, we'll never maybe know the complete story. But what we do know is the following. We know that Epstein had a lot of people who were very influential in political circles. We know that his very, very close friend, somebody who provided him with
his procurer.
The procurer, yes, but also Leslie Wexner.
Leslie Wexner, Mr. Victoria's Secret.
Exactly.
And also Mr. the Mega Group or something.
Yes. Yes.
That was a huge. Could you talk about that?
Yeah. Well, the thing about Wexner was that he gave Epstein hundreds of millions of dollars. Now, after Epstein was arrested, Wexner says Epstein stole the money from him.
Yeah. Sure.
But however it happened,
he practically gave that mansion away to Epstein.
Exactly.
And sold it to him for a few bucks.
And he let Epstein use his yacht.
Yeah. No, I mean, Wexner is not spinning a credible tale.
Yeah. And of course, Wexner is a very large a donor in Republican Party politics.
Yep.
Now, Epstein was an equal opportunity political person. He had friends in both sides of the aisles. All right.
Oh yeah, at that level, you understand at the elite that elite level, right and left is not the issue.
Right. I mean, it was friendships and relationships.
Yeah.
So he cultivated people on the left, on the right, Democrats, Republicans, and that gave him a tremendous amount of both actual influence and apparent influence. I mean, think of these young girls.
Yeah, but he was also the fact that he was running not just a sex trafficking ring, for interested pedophiles, but he was running a blackmail operation. And that's also worth looking at, because that's what's protecting. I think the blackmail operation is what's really protecting him.
Yes, and one of the things that we've been trying to do is to find the tapes. We know he had the tapes. We know he took tapes. We know where the cameras were.
Have you asked the FBI?
We've asked, but we haven't. They haven't answered.
Yeah, I spoke to my FBI contacts on your behalf. I want you to know.
Thank you.
And he told me, he said, look, he said, they're working on a criminal case. And so not only
do
they...
now they are, right?
Yeah,
now
exactly.
Eventually.
But who knows if it's a...
Long enough.
Well, is it a criminal slash containment case? You know, because that happens with the FBI.
Why wasn't it a criminal case 20 years ago?
And because I said, you know, I was saying, why is it that the people who are representing the victims, the lawyers representing the victim, this is to me a big hole in the law, okay? I understand you have your criminal case to make, and you, but you had exclusive access to the evidence that the lawyers for the victims also should have.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
So you're saying, oh, we're hanging on to this. It doesn't mean that you're... That your evidence
is going to be... The victimization continues.
Well, no. Here's my logic. My logic is go forth with your criminal case and with the evidence. The evidence is not going to change just because you share it with the lawyers who are representing the victims.
And I'm saying the victims continue to be victimized.
Exactly. As a matter of fact, now I have to say... And I don't know if any case has ever been brought like this, and if it can be. But why can't you bring a suit against them and say, you're obstructing justice in my cases because you're not giving me evidence that you alone had the right to go collect for some reason because you're, you know, a federal agency. Right. Is that not possible?
It really isn't possible. Not possible, because the law gives the prosecutors enormous power, both to accumulate evidence and to keep it secret. And unfortunately, unless the prosecutors and the FBI are willing to share, under the current law, there's no way we can force them to share.
I mean, I was told, yes, he should call the general counsel's office of the FBI. And I thought to myself, I bet he's called 50 times.
Yeah, we've called every place we can find.
I mean, at this point, you're going to have to send in somebody to, you know, I don't know.
I have a question. What might be on those tapes that your clients don't already...
Oh, are you kidding?
No, that would... I know a lot, but how are you thinking? What are they saying?
I mean, here's the thing. We know a lot about what happened, but knowing about it and proving it are two different things.
Right.
And, of course, everybody who's accused says, oh, no, not me. Maybe I knew him, but I didn't know him very well.
Wait. Okay. Let me segue into some bites, clips that I have. Of course, your client, Virginia Roberts Guif, it's...
Yeah, how do you say it?
En français.
It's French. It's French.
En français. I can say it in French, but how do you say it in English again? Guif?
Giffray.
Okay. Virginia Roberts Giffray. She's figured prominently in the news because of this disastrous interview, disastrous for Prince Andrew, that Prince Andrew gave. And I just want to play...
And the Project Veritas bombshell, which we'll talk about. Project Veritas.
Yeah, I don't know what that bombshell is.
Oh, wow. Okay, well, we'll get
okay,
to
it. Okay, don't forget.
Okay, expose of ABC.
Oh, yeah. Right, okay. So anyway, here is Prince Andrew's response to does he know Virginia? Jess, could you play the first two clips, please?
Oh, he was over at the other desk. Here he comes. Sorry, Jesse.
Oh, Jess is our man.
We don't give him much warning. Okay.
We don't.
Did you hear what Christina asked for,
the
Jesse?
First two clips.
Yeah, he's got it. Okay, it's coming.
Against you. She says she met you in 2001. She says she dined with you, danced with you, at Tramp nightclub in London. She went on to have sex with you in a house in Belgravia belonging to Ghislaine Maxwell, your friend. Your response?
I have no recollection of ever meeting this lady.
Because in a legal deposition, 2015, she said she had sex with you three times. Once in a London house when she was trafficked to you in Maxwell's house.
Yes.
Once in New York a month or so later at Epstein's mansion, and once on his private island in a group of seven or eight other girls.
No.
No to all of it.
All of it.
No.
Absolutely no.
No recollection.
Sucks it in.
No.
Well, why would she be saying those things?
We wonder exactly the same.
Oh, no.
But I have no idea. Absolutely no idea.
She made these claims in a US deposition.
Mm-hmm.
Are you saying you don't believe her? She's lying.
That's a very difficult thing to answer, because I'm not in a position to know what she's trying to achieve, but I can tell you categorically, I don't remember meeting her at all. I do not remember a photograph being taken, and I've said consistently and frequently that we never had any sort of sexual contact whatever.
What say you, Mr. Boyce?
Well, I think that when he says, I don't remember, I don't recall.
Yeah, we've heard that in Congress a million times.
We've heard that a lot. Mm-hmm. And you notice he doesn't say, I never had sex with anybody associated with Jeffrey Epstein. He said, and he doesn't say, I never had sex with any of those young women. What he's saying is, I don't remember whether it was Virginia or not.
Well, actually, what he says is
libel,
he
right?
keeps
right.
saying right. he doesn't. Yeah, but then he says he doesn't remember. He doesn't remember. He doesn't. And then he says, I categorically deny having relations with her or something. Yeah. And so we back to the question about where evidence of his liaisons with Virginia would be. What do you have to say about that?
Well, we know that there were cameras. We know there were cameras all over. We know there were cameras in the so-called massage room. We know there were cameras in the bedrooms. And there were cameras in the hallways and in all the other rooms as well. We know that they were stored on computer hard drives. We know those computer hard drives were removed. They were removed at least twice. Once, back in the early 2000s, when the Palm Beach police raided his place. Epstein had been tipped off, and you could see where the hard drives had been ripped out of the computers. And then again, more recently.
Oh, so they weren't removed by law enforcement?
No. Well, they were not removed by law enforcement. However, there is a rumor, there are assertions, that there was one laptop that law enforcement did get, and that initially it looked like the laptop had been wiped clean. But thereafter, they were able to recover some video. Now, and like so much in this case, the story is a little fantastical. But there is a former Palm Beach sheriff's police officer in Russia, mm-hmm. Who claims to have that laptop.
Well, what's he waiting for? The right price? Is that it?
I don't know. I mean, he's talked to some reporters about it. Reporters say they've even sort of seen some fuzzy images.
Oh, boy. Fuzzy images.
We were approached by somebody 2 or 3 months ago.
What happened?
Well, what happened was that Brad Edwards was approached, and Brad is somebody who's worked on these cases even longer than I have, was approached by somebody who said, I was Jeffrey Epstein's IT man, and I have servers
Wow.
that have thousands and thousands of hours of these videos of people having sex.
Okay.
And Brad turned this guy over. He said his name was Patrick. We later learned that that was not his real name. And we don't know, we never found out his real name.
Memo to file, when you go meet with any of these shady people, you have got to record them.
Right.
You have got to record them on video and audio with your little, you know, super secret spy thing, because otherwise, because it'd be interesting to know whether genuine or not, who sent this guy.
Absolutely. That's 100% right. And was he genuine? And genuine or not, who sent him?
Exactly.
Why is he approaching?
Yep.
I mean, is he somebody who's just out for money? Is he somebody who's trying to set you up? The thing is, when these people appear, you never know what their motivation is. You never know whether they're real.
Yep.
But you always have to follow it up, because if this guy was real, he had a treasure
trove. He's a gold mine. Yeah.
Of evidence. So Brad's partner, Stan Pottinger, interviewed him and then called me and said, we've got this guy who claims to be Epstein's IT man. So I met with him a couple of times. And the problem from my perspective was that he promised a lot, but then he never delivered. And also the other thing is, when you're dealing with a whistleblower, one of the things you're always trying to find out is, does he know something that's not public? That is, does he have information that only somebody who was in the position that he or she says they were in could have? And he didn't know anything really that wasn't public. And he didn't know some of the things that I knew based on our investigation. So I was very suspicious of him from the outset. But on the other hand, I wanted to believe him, because I wanted...
You want some evidence.
I wanted that evidence.
Yeah.
So I then had to go off on a try in another case, and Stan Pottinger dealt with him for 2 months. And the guy, it was always the check is in the mail. Always going to just have it. If we just got a little more time...
I'll give you one bit of advice about whistleblowers, being one myself for the press and Celia too, and that is, when they come forward, if you're a real whistleblower, you're either a firsthand source and you have your proof right then and there, because you're anxious to share it with somebody.
Right.
And if that doesn't happen right off the bat, you can pretty much not waste your time.
Right.
Because, you know... A whistleblower is a whistleblower for a reason.
For a reason.
Their conscience is bothering them so much. They have seen or been involved with or done something that is so awful to them that they're putting their survival aside, committing professional seppuku, and coming to you.
Yes.
So just keep that in mind next time, you know.
Right.
But also... Take pictures of these imposters, because they need to be looked at and investigated themselves for doing that, because that's really dirty. So evidence, let's talk about evidence for a minute. Virginia herself provided a photograph of herself at 17 with Prince Andrew. He's got his arm around her. Ghislaine Maxwell, procurer of Epstein's underage girls, is there smiling.
Right in the background.
In the background. So he was asked about that photograph. Let's hear what Prince Andrew has to say about that photograph. Jess, will you play the other two bits for me, please?
She provided a photo of the two of you together.
Yes.
Your arm was around her waist.
Yes.
You've seen the photo.
I've seen the photograph.
How do you explain that?
I can't. Because I have absolutely no memory of that photograph ever being taken.
Do you recognize yourself in the photo?
Yeah, it's pretty difficult not to recognize yourself.
Your friend suggested that the photo is fake.
I think it's from the investigations that we've done, You can't prove whether or not that photograph is faked or not, because it is a photograph of a photograph of a photograph. So it's very difficult to be able to prove it. But I don't remember that photograph ever being taken.
But it's possible that it was you with your arm around.
That's me, but whether that's my hand or whether that's the position, I have simply no recollection of a photograph ever being taken. I'm not entirely convinced that, I mean, that is what I would describe as me in that picture. But we can't be certain as to whether or not that's my hand on her, whatever it is, left side.
You think that?
Because I have no recollection of that photograph ever being taken.
It's me, but we can't be sure it was. It's my hand on me in the picture.
but you see what he's saying is, if he really didn't go around putting his arm around young girls like that, he would say it can't be me because I never would do that. Instead, he's saying, "Gee, I can't prove one way or another whether the photograph is real." The fact of the matter is, this photograph has been out there for years now. When it first came out, if he hadn't done this, he would have said, that photograph's a fake because I know it couldn't exist because I didn't do it. He's never said that.
Well, the interesting thing is, apparently that photograph came from a small camera that Virginia
had
and had given. Apparently Epstein is the one taking the picture.
Yes.
That's what this BBC reporter is saying. So Virginia... she must have the original photograph.
Well, I think that the photograph that when he says it's a picture, I don't think that's exactly accurate. Some of the things that have been published have been a picture of a picture.
Right, right.
But the small photograph was, I don't know where it exists right now, but it existed. And there's no doubt about that this is a real photograph.
Right.
And there's no doubt that Prince Andrew knows it's a real photograph,
right?
Because when it first came out, if it hadn't been true,
yeah, he would have been all over.
He would have been all over it. He would have said, "That's got to be a fake because I never ever did that."
So, what are you doing about Prince Andrew?
Well, we've asked to interview him, and thus far he has he's declined. Now, you saw the statement that he made when he was stepped down. And
he said if he would talk to the FBI if required.
If required.
Yes.
Now I don't know what exactly whether he means by required, by requested.
Probably by law. If his lawyers say you better go or whatever. But
now, what I've said publicly in response to that is that I think it's a positive step that he is beginning to take some responsibility here. But I think what would really be a positive step is that if he were prepared to now be interviewed by the attorneys for these victims. He purported in his statement to be very concerned about the welfare of Epstein and Maxwell's victims. And if he really is, then I think what he ought to do is he ought to sit down with us and give us the evidence he has. At a minimum, he's a very important witness, entirely regardless of his own conduct.
Well, that's my concern. My concern is, because this is what I'm seeing in the press right now, how things are being framed in terms of what he's willing and not willing to do, extradition and all that, is that, oh, yes, he's a very important witness. And, you know, I'm not liking that very much because that really takes off the table the real crime that he committed. Engaging in these activities.
I don't think it takes it off. I think it's only the first step. I mean, if he comes forward and is interviewed by the FBI and gives testimony, then if he doesn't tell the truth, that itself is a crime. If he does tell the truth, he's going to have to implicate himself. He's an important witness generally, but he's the most important witness against himself. And the question is whether he is prepared to come forward and, as Virginia has said, simply come clean. And
well, he's a wedged bear in a tight spot then.
It is. It's tough. I mean, he's in a very very difficult position, and a lot of people are going to be in that position. I've said before, if I were one of the people who participated in the Epstein sex trafficking, I'd be very worried right now.
Yeah, but you're dealing with very powerful, high profile, and might I add, reptilian players.
Mm-hmm.
As you know,
right.
We can segue, and I'm not implying or
right.
may or may not be implying about reptiles, whatever. Mm. Let's segue to Mr. Dershowitz
right.
and how he has been defending himself.
Right. Now, the thing about Alan Dershowitz that is outrageous is the kind of attacks he has made on these victims, not just recently, but going all the way back to 2006 and 2007 and 2008 when he was representing Jeffrey Epstein. He not only
wasn't it early 2000s that he started representing Epstein?
Oh, he's been representing Epstein for a long time.
Or since late 90s?
Yeah, I think it goes.
They're friends.
Yeah, they're close friends.
Him, yeah.
They're close friends.
Yeah, yeah. And he knew nothing about this.
And he knew nothing about it,
right.
He says.
And,
well, I mean, that's.
And Virginia says she had sex with him.
Oh,
right?
Not only Virginia, but there are two sworn affidavits filed in court by young women who describe him having sex with him. I mean, it is the evidence. And one of the things that he has done is he has simply repeatedly said things that were not true. An innocent person doesn't do that.
Isn't that cause for disbarment? I mean, is a lawyer allowed to lie like that?
A lawyer is not. And I hope bar associations are looking at his conduct because bar associations are supposed to protect.
Yeah, but can't you bring it to the attention of the bar association?
Well, the bar association, this is all public. I mean, the bar
right.
associations know about this. They and one of the things.
Yeah, but a formal complaint to a bar association, right. what that does, as you know,
mm-hmm. right.
is when you go look up a lawyer, that right. complaint pops up.
Right. We've thought about that. In fact, we've sued him. Of course.
Yeah, and he sued you.
He hasn't sued me.
Oh, he hasn't sued
no,
you?
No, he hasn't sued me.
Because he's attached you plenty.
No, he has not sued me.
Oh, okay.
But
he did get you off of representing Virginia for
yeah,
his case.
Right, and that was really another step that I thought was just deplorable. I mean, what he did was he claimed I was a witness.
Yeah, I know. To what exactly?
It's really a witness to his misconduct.
Yes.
Okay. And so he says, I'm a witness, therefore I can't be a lawyer. Now, it is true that in general, if you are a witness in a case, and a critical witness in a case, there's limits on what you can do as a lawyer.
Hold up. Because you're representing Virginia, who says she had sex with him, and you're her lawyer, you're a witness to his misconduct because you're representing Virginia? Am I getting that straight?
It's pretty close to that. But what happened was because I was representing Virginia, I had these conversations with him. And he's saying, because I had these conversations with him, I am now a witness to those conversations. So I am now a witness in the case. It is really backwards, and I think it was a terrible manipulation of the justice system.
Oh, my God. How come nobody saw? Isn't that a legal malpractice case right there?
Well, it is. I don't know about legal malpractice, but what I think it was a very unjust result. However, be careful what you ask for.
Okay.
Because he wanted to get me off that case. He got me off that case. You know who replaced me?
Who?
Chuck Cooper.
Oh, yeah.
Who is at least as good a lawyer and at least as aggressive a lawyer as I am, okay? And not only now, Chuck Cooper is representing Virginia suing Mr. Dershowitz, but I have now sued him personally for defamation.
All right.
So now instead of being deposed by me, he's going to be deposed both by me and by Chuck Cooper.
Oh, boy.
So He can run, but he can't hide. But one of the things that people need to understand about his conduct here is, as I say, this goes back years, where he went on vicious attacks on these young girls, calling them prostitutes.
That's classic.
Saying they used drugs, they drank, every way that they could to diminish, demean, and hurt these young victims. And that itself, I think, was deplorable. Then
it's beyond deplorable. Yeah. I mean, it is defamation, yeah. as you yeah. say.
It is. And now he's being held to account for it.
I think that's good.
But once it became public, Virginia and another girl came forward and said that Epstein and Dershowitz had abused them sexually. He went on this other attack, and he just said one thing after another that has proven to be untrue. For example, he was quoted in the Daily News as saying, "I never had a massage." Then, of course, Epstein's housekeepers testify, "Of course he did." And then he came back and said, "Well, I had a massage, but I kept my underpants on. And I didn't really like it."
So these are the backup positions now that are unpeeling. Right.
I had
my pants on.
And it was an older Russian woman. Now, I guarantee you, Jeffrey Epstein didn't keep older women around to give massages.
The implication being there was no erection involved.
Right, exactly. You know. Then he says, he says, "I want to have the truth come out. And so I'll waive the statute of limitations so that Virginia can sue me for sex abuse, and we'll let a court decide." He goes on national television and says, I'm willing to waive the statute of limitations.
Okay.
So, of course, Virginia's lawyer, who wasn't me at the time.
Jumped on that,
said, "Here's a waiver."
Yeah.
And Dershowitz immediately backed away, said, no, I don't want to do that. Okay? Brad Edwards and Judge Casale sued Dershowitz for defamation because he accused them. Dershowitz attacks all of the lawyers for the victims. And of course,
attack everybody. Go on the offense.
The best defense is a great offense.
He
writes books about that, how you've got to attack the other side.
Keep going. He's just digging himself in deeper.
He's just digging deeper and deeper.
Yeah.
And so he goes, he gets sued. And he says, "I really welcome this. This is going to be great. I'm now going to get my chance in court." Then you know what he does?
What?
He pays a lot of money to settle it.
How much does he pay? Do you know?
Well, that's confidential.
Okay, but lots of money.
But he paid. What I can tell you is he told me that he was prepared to pay lots of money to settle it. So he gets rid of that case. Then, of course, he goes on television and writes things about how he's challenging Virginia to sue him. He's calling her an extortionist. And a perjurer.
Boy. Oh.
And he says, "And I challenge her, because I want to be vindicated." She sues him. What does he do? He ducks service. All right? Then, after he agrees to accept service, all right, he insists on a delay in his time to answer. Then, when he does answer, he moves to dismiss the case on the grounds that it's past the statute of limitations.
Oh, there we go.
He's done everything he can.
He's such a weasel.
He's done everything he can to avoid a reckoning in court.
Oh. And I won't say he's a weasel. I'll say his tactics are weasel-like.
Yeah, right. Well, I can tell you that what he has done has really been a disgrace. I think he's a disgrace to the legal profession. I think his attacks on these young victims are disgraceful. I think he's a person with no shame. He is somebody who believes that he can bully people, And he's gotten away with it.
Yes, he has.
In the past.
Well, he's a protected guy.
Yeah.
For many, many reasons. I want to talk about somebody else, the one living person closest to Epstein who has disappeared.
Yes.
Where in the world is Ghislaine
Maxwell?
Right.
I wish I knew. We've got our suspicions. It's possible she's still in the United States. She has relatives in the United States. It's possible she's here. I am very doubtful about that.
No, I would think she'd be someplace where she couldn't be grabbed.
And I think that if I had to make a bet, I had one place to look first, I'd look in Israel.
Yes.
I think second place I would look is be the United Kingdom, where she's got a lot of friends and places she could go. Third possibility would be France, where, again, she has places where she could go. And
yeah, and you were telling me something kind of shocking about France, because we were talking about Jean-Luc Brunel, the modeling agency guy who also provided women for Epstein's little operation there. Could you talk about him and the shocking thing about France? It's so disappointing.
Well, one of the things about France, as I understand the law, is that they will not extradite their citizens. I mean, for example, Roman Polanski fled to France after abusing, I think it was a 13-year-old.
Yes.
He was charged with a crime, and he was let out on bail, and he jumped
and
bail,
he disappeared,
fled to France, and they've been unable to get him back because France won't extradite him because he's a citizen. One of the problems is that countries around the world do not live up to what we would think of as obligations of civilization, which is to help bring people who commit these crimes to justice. You've got some places, like Brazil, that simply won't extradite anybody. no matter who you are, no matter what you did, they just don't extradite people.
Isn't that where a lot of the Nazis went?
Yeah, in South America.
Brazil, Paraguay,
Argentina.
For sure.
Argentina.
Yeah.
Remember the movie The Boys from Brazil?
Yes, of course.
I have a question that's kind of a deep and broad overarching question. Did Jeffrey Epstein, first of all, am I okay sound-wise here? We're having some problems with my mic. You can hear me.
I can hear you.
I can hear you, good.
Did Epstein bring Virginia in on what he was doing and why and for whom?
In some ways, a little bit, but not very much. For example, he would explain to her that he wanted her to tell him about what she did with people and how they were. And, of course, he was recording these things on video. He didn't trust anybody. Maybe other than Maxwell, who was really a partner in crime. She participated in every step. I mean, she was not only a procurer; she was a procurer. And
they ran the business.
But
together.
They ran the sex trafficking together, and she participated in the abuse of these girls
sexually.
We have victims. And other lawyers have victims.
God, this depravity
who were
no end.
Physically
boys and girls,
just girls. That she participated in the sexual abuse of these children.
Were boys involved at all? By the way,
not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
Now you're in court with Ghislaine right now.
Yes.
And trying to get the rest of these records.
Yeah, we're in court with her in a couple of different ways. We're in court with her now trying to get public the records from our 2015 lawsuit. We sued her in 2015, and one of the great frustrations was we laid out in a public complaint the Epstein-Maxwell sex trafficking, and we went to the district attorney here, in New York. We went to the U.S. Attorney's office here in New York. We went to the press, went to the New York Times, went to the Wall Street Journal. We said, here is a real story. We went to ABC. We said, here is a real story that you need to cover. This is a serious problem. And we said to the prosecutors, these are serious crimes that you ought to investigate. And we laid out for them, not only in our complaint, but in as our evidence came in, all of the evidence of those crimes, all of the evidence of the continuing sex trafficking that was going on. And nobody was interested. Not the prosecutors, not the media. Nobody paid any attention to it. We fought this case for 5 years, and almost nobody paid any attention. The first time that we got serious attention from the press was beginning in February of 2018. I sat down with Julie Brown from the Miami Herald, and she took this case on and researched it thoroughly for almost a year. The only other publication that really began to dig into it prior to Epstein's arrest was the Daily Beast. But what people like to think of as the mainstream media.
What was their response when you submitted it to them? After all, you're a very well-known, very prominent lawyer. Right. When you come with something, it's not, you know, it's worth paying attention to.
I would have thought so. And indeed, a lot of relatively routine cases that I do get publicity just because I'm doing them.
Exactly.
But this was an important case. We'd filed this case here in New York, the media capital of the world. We'd laid out this horrific sex trafficking operation in our complaint. And then we filed a second complaint on behalf of a young woman by the name of Sarah Ransom. And in this one, we sued not only Maxwell, but we sued Epstein. We sued Sarah Kellen. And again, we laid out.
Who's Sarah Kellen?
She was another person who procured girls for Epstein.
Silencio. Nothing.
Nothing. No, nobody seemed to care.
Nobody said, did they not even call and say, oh, we're passing on this for XYZ reason? Did anybody ever give you?
No, we never got an explanation. We never got an explanation. Wow. The only explanation I ever got was I got an explanation from Alan Dershowitz. and he told me that when he was trying to convince us that we ought to try to settle with him and get him out, he was telling us how powerful and important he was. And he was saying he had killed the ABC story by threatening them. And that's the only explanation that I've ever had for the press not covering this story.
Interesting.
But it was an enormous frustration.
What does this say to you?
Well, it just says to us that every institution that was supposed to protect these girls failed them. Lawyers failed them. Prosecutors failed them. The media failed them. And when you are a young, vulnerable, disadvantaged girl or boy, the deck is stacked against you. And I think the media really is elitist. I think I had one reporter refer to my clients as street girls. And they couldn't identify with these victims. They didn't think of them as their daughters.
Who told them they were street girls?
What?
Who told them they were street girls?
No, I mean, I said a reporter referred
them. No, I know, but why does the reporter say there? I really think that's something that was conveyed by someone to that reporter, because even I agree with the elitist thing, you don't just call a poor person a street person. And a street person implies that you're like a street walker, within the context of the Epstein thing. Right. So,
Well, of course, remember that was what Epstein's defense was. And that was one of the things that Alan Dershowitz and other people were selling. These are prostitutes. These are just doing it. These are just people who are voluntarily doing this for money.
There was a member of the British aristocracy who said this on television in that BBC or a previous interview.
I remember that just recently.
She said, we're talking about prostitutes.
Right.
Lady something.
Yeah. I mean,
you have to look it up.
Yeah, but these aren't prostitutes. These are children. I mean, these are children that are being taken advantage of.
That's the deflection. That's the only fig leaf and deflection against the vast crime.
Exactly.
They toss that out there.
And as I say, that was Dershowitz's message. He called them prostitutes. Tried to diminish them because some of them used drugs, some of them drank. If you just think of the horrific position that these children are put in, you drink and use drugs as well.
But I just want to come back to something, though, that Jeffrey Epstein's hedonism, infinite as it was, is one thing. But the fastidious recording is something that still feels to me like the elephant in the room.
I think that's right. I think this was not... this was a hedonist, okay? But this was also somebody who was accumulating vast sums of money. And this was somebody who was accumulating really important evidence against rich and powerful people. Now, how he used all of that, we don't have a clue. We have a clue, but we only have the tip of the iceberg. This is a story that's going to go on for a long time.
And we haven't begun, really,
and
right?
We're only beginning to peel back the onion.
Yeah.
We're only beginning to get people to come forward. And the thing about a story like this is it doesn't stop. It's not going to go away. Once he got arrested, all of a sudden now the press thinks it's a story. It's a thing, right?
Right.
And so now everybody wants to write about it. And now you've got press from all over the world.
Because he can't hurt anybody anymore.
He can't hurt anybody anymore.
And why is nobody really writing about Ghislaine, though?
Well, I think it's a combination of things. She's still alive. She still has powerful friends. I think that some of the same reasons continue to apply that applied back in 2015, 2016, 2017. She has a lot of money. She has a lot of resources. And, Epstein was paying for her legal expenses when we sued the two of them together. Whether the estate is still funding her or not, we don't know. But there are a lot of powerful people with an incentive to help protect her.
So we don't have very much time left, but your company has already spent millions on this thing.
We have.
Sorry, Christina, go ahead.
Well, my question to you is, going forward, I'm worried about you being bled dry, first of all, but what are your next moves?
Well,
as much as you can talk about.
Well, then our next moves, we filed 5 recent lawsuits. We've got additional lawsuits that are going to come. And we've spent millions of dollars on this. On the other hand, we're a big firm. We've got a lot of clients.
And you have a lot of wattage over there too.
And we got some wattage over there, and we make good living. And
And you've seen better croissants.
Those actually look pretty good. They're looking better
all
the time.
We brought some croissants over.
But we're not. He's not going to bleed us dry. All right.
Good.
We're in this for the long haul, and we don't go away easy.
I'm glad to hear that.
I'm very curious. The story about the prison guards who are in trouble now, that seems really significant to me. Do you agree?
It does. And I'd love to have a chance to interview those people.
There's like a hammer falling from somewhere. Do you know where or who?
We don't. And
they seem to want to talk, too.
Well, I think what they want to do is they want to avoid going to jail.
Yeah.
And and I don't think they're going to talk except in the context of trying to avoid jail right now. Look at what had to happen.
This is so big.
They removed him from suicide watch.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But that itself, the guy allegedly tries to commit suicide. They remove him from suicide watch. They then remove his cellmate.
And the cameras.
And the cameras. And they don't look in on him. Now, if you were writing a screenplay,
a bad spy novel,
yeah.
People would say, it's not possible. Right. You know, it's not credible.
No, they'd say, oh, he's being set up for something.
Oh, well, he definitely.
Yeah.
Know? And I mean, I hope this doesn't end up like the Kennedy assassination, where nobody really ever gets to the bottom.
Anniversary today, by the way.
You know? Do you think the photograph was Jeffrey Epstein of the dead man being wheeled out?
I've got to hope it is. I got to believe it is. It's incomprehensible to me how he could have committed suicide, but it's inconceivable to me, and I hope it is always inconceivable to me, to believe that he actually could be murdered inside a United States prison. Now, I know a lot of things happen like that. You know, bad things can happen. But I don't want to believe that our society has broken down so badly that somebody can infiltrate into our prison system and murder the person who was probably the highest profile.
Yeah, there was a lot of speculation on the internet that it didn't look like him. The nose was all wrong.
Right. Well,
did Virginia speak to you about that at all?
No, I didn't speak to her.
Well, I wouldn't want to speculate about that, but I'm not surprised that this happened. I mean, I think that the high sign was given the first time.
But there was something weird about
that photograph. His potential suicide was announced with, oh, he tried to kill himself, but couldn't do it.
But the idea that the New York Post photographer was there waiting right at that moment.
Well, yeah, no, the whole thing is suspicious.
Like everything
else, the
whole thing is weird.
It's bizarre.
I tried to reach that.
It is bizarre.
Let me tell you something, David. Don't not go to those dark spaces, because those people at that level, the dark forces behind Epstein, have been there for hundreds of years, my friend. So
no, there's no doubt about that.
You know, have no illusions about that as you go forward with your really honorable mission. You have our deepest gratitude,
thank you.
For sure.
Thank you.
We're done for today, but we do hope you'll come visit us again.
I'd be happy to.
Okay,
fascinating conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.